On today's episode of Talkin' Tom, we're watching the most depressing movie yet, Radio Flyer, featuring a small cameo by your man, my man, and our man, Tom Hanks.
Radio Flyer is a 1992 drama fantasy film directed by Richard Donner and features Tom Hanks in his first uncredited performance.
So, if you like being confused, depressed, and generally let down by humanity, keep listening.
I got nothing else to add to that.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
And we're back.
Whoa. What up, Hanks heads?
Welcome back to another episode of Talking Tom, a Pod Hanks Tomcast.
Where we watch Tom Hanks movies and talk about them.
And chat about them. It's a gloomy-ish day in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
We had a string of hot and now it's kind of like low 70s. It's kind of nice.
Yes. I am wearing a sweater. I noticed you're wearing shorts.
Yeah, I've been wearing shorts a lot lately to my detriment, but...
That is a nice pair of shorts.
They're pretty dope.
They're like exquisite Tom shorts.
Yeah. These are like some Castaway shorts.
I'm wearing like the pant version of those shorts, I feel.
You could be like, that's like late 80s Tom.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Fashion icon.
Speaking of Tom Hanks, before we totally get into this movie, we watched this movie separately.
Yes.
You and I both have been really swamped with work.
Busy.
We're just... A couple of working professionals taking on the modern workforce.
And trying to make time for our podcast.
Yeah. We really can do both. Kind of.
Sort of, yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Pretty well.
So how has your week been?
Week is good. It's just very busy. Nothing anyone on the podcast would be like, wow, what an interesting development there, Daniel.
Got it.
That's the kind of week I've been having.
Okay. Yeah. I would say the same for me. It's just like, every day I wake up and I go to work and then I come home.
This looking like prepping for the podcast was the most like exciting moment of the week in preparation. Though I am going to go, we're going to go see The Incredibles 2 later. So that's pretty exciting.
I went and saw Ocean's 8.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Okay. We'll talk about it.
Okay. I saw Hereditary, which I really dug.
It's too spooky for me.
It was cool. It's... Horror movies in theaters with a packed audience are always hit or miss. Like, A Quiet Place was pretty awful. Yeah. The movie was great, but people were obnoxious.
Yeah.
But Hereditary went at the Vista, and people were, like, really into it, and it was, like, a primo horror crowd, which is hard to get sometimes.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is nice.
Yeah, that does sound nice, if I wasn't too scared.
Well, we can talk about another scary thing, which is this film, Radio Flyer.
Pretty scary. This movie was kind of a trap.
I had never heard of this movie.
Same. Never in my mere whisper of a thought had this shown up.
I guess, when we read the title, that's the detriment of what we're doing is we go into movies we haven't seen completely blind. So we do no research beforehand.
Yeah.
And what we kind of came to discover with this one is... This is less a Tom Hanks movie. Tom Hanks bookends the movie. He's a dad. Happy Father's Day, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And he's a dad in this movie. And then is the narrator. He narrates his life as a kid.
Yeah.
On and off.
Yeah.
But it's really not a Tom Hanks performance movie.
Yeah. I would say he's in 5% of the finished film.
Yeah, that's fair.
We get about 3 minutes total Tom screen time.
Did you see the poster?
Yes.
What did you think?
This is literally what I did. I looked at the poster and I was like, Daniel must be confused. This can't be the movie we're watching.
I did that when I was looking and I was gonna go rent it. I was confused because Tom Hanks is not like listed. Like he's not on the poster.
Or in the Amazon rental because we both rented it on Amazon.
I finally looked it up and it was like Tom Hanks goes uncredited in this. And I'll be curious, we'll get into maybe why he took that. But yeah, the poster's really weird. Did you have a Radio Flyer or a Red Wagon growing up?
I didn't have a metal kind, but I had like a plastic one.
I don't know if mine was like a true Radio Flyer, but I had a wagon and the poster of this is like a wagon with wings on it.
Yeah.
I wasn't really sure, like, part of me was like, oh, what if it's like a, it's clearly like a kid's fantasy movie, and there's like a quote about E.T. on it, and I was like, so maybe there's some type of supernatural element, but ugh. No.
If only.
Oh, maybe a little bit, but not really.
Yeah. So, let's sum it up for the listeners at home. Yeah,
I guess the best way I would sum it up is it's about, Tom Hanks has, the movie is about Tom Hanks as a dad, he has two kids, and his two kids are fighting at the beginning of the movie. And Tom Hanks tells them, I don't remember his name, just, he's just dead. And they're getting into a fight about like breaking a promise or something. And Tom Hanks goes into like, let me tell you why this is important. And we flash back to Tom Hanks as a kid, as a young Elijah Wood. Which, let me start things off on a positive note by saying, the kids in this movie, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Elijah Wood is a great child actor. Mm-hmm. I've never seen him in a so child small. Actor role, but he was great. Like,
yeah.
Sold a lot of what he was asked to do. But their dad leaves them with their mom, and their mom finds a new man who's this very emotionally and physically abusive guy, and is physically abusive, emotionally abusive to everyone, and then physically abusive to one of the his brother, Tom Hanks's young Elijah Wood, who is Tom Hanks as younger self, his brother.
Yeah, Mike and Bobby.
Yeah. I'd already forgotten their names. Same. It's been 12 hours, so. And that's kind of, and so they get a radio flyer for, I think, a birthday or Christmas or something. And that kind of becomes their escape. They sort of try and escape their life of abuse and into like a fantasy world. Mm. Sort of. I feel like it sort of relies on like Tom Hanks is narrating this sometimes. And there is kind of an unreliable aspect to it because a lot of it is this fantastical, like, sort of, so you sort of question what's real and what's not real and what these kids kind of devise. Because they sort of explain it in the movie that once you cross a certain age, you forget how to think this way, mm-hmm. which I thought that was kind of interesting, that as a young kid, you can dream and see things proper, and then you lose that as you get older, which mm-hmm. is kind of dark.
Yeah.
That's kind of the story.
Yeah.
It's pretty basic in that regard.
It was very sad.
Yeah.
At one point, I texted you saying, this movie's fucking me up.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, I woke up early to watch this movie and I was just sitting in bed trying to just enjoy a Tom Hanks film, much to my horror, no Tom, and then just like a bunch of really sad child abuse.
Yeah, with the comparison on the poster to E.T., I thought this was going to be like a really happy, optimistic film and then would have, you know, some sad elements that they would overcome, but it's kind of just like front to back. Sad. Yeah. Like even the ending, since it's sort of fantastical, we don't know if it's sad, like really depressing or like actually uplifting.
Right. So let's talk about promises.
Yeah, this movie seems to have a lot to say about promises.
I mean, the biggest promise that Tom is referring to at the beginning, saying why you should never break a promise, it's the only thing you have.
Yeah.
Is he's talking about a promise he made to his little brother when he first uncovered the abuse by their stepfather. His little brother made him promise, don't tell mom, don't do anything about this. This is just between me and you.
Yeah.
And for some reason, little Mikey, little Tom, decides to keep that promise. Understandable. They're little kids.
Yeah, I don't. From conversations I've had and things I've read about people in situations of abuse like this, it seems to be a common thing. I feel like there's always like that blowback of like, well, why didn't you just tell someone?
Right.
That sort of like victim blaming mindset.
Exactly.
And I think in a way, like the movie tries to portray this honest thing of like people sort of go close in on themselves and like this is a realistic thing.
Yeah. It's heavy stuff.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think there is that initial instinct of like, well, just tell your mom, like, then it will be fine.
Yeah.
But also then when the mom did find out, she still took him back. She still took the stepfather back. And these poor kids are kind of in a bad situation. They're terrified. I felt full of dread there for a lot of the movie because you never know when the stepfather is going to come back. And I will say it's not very graphic.
No.
Besides the dog.
It's mostly implied.
Yeah. And you never really see, I noticed, the adults at all. The mom you see a little, but the stepfather's almost always shot from neck
the
down.
Waist, always like waist. With a beer in his hand.
Yeah, or from behind, you never see his face except for that one shot where he's crying.
And I kind of wonder if that plays into this sort of unreliable narrator aspect where, like, we're remembering as he remembered it, and he seems to be blocking out, like, that physical persona almost.
Yeah, I could see that.
I would like to know the background of the... I read up on some of the stuff. There was, like, a different director attached to direct this, and then Richard Donner, who's famous, he did Superman and was infamously fired from Superman 2, which he had, like, shot most of already. And he did, like, Lethal Weapons. So he has, like, a really interesting catalog of movies. And this is different than anything I've seen from him.
What happens when a director shoots half of a movie and then gets fired? Do they reshoot the whole movie?
It kind of depends. Like, that's sort of the rumor around the Solo movie, where allegedly shot. They were, like, 3 weeks from wrapping. And Ron Howard came on, and it's unknown how much he actually reshot. But shot enough that he has sole credit.
Wow.
It's interesting. So there seemed to be some troubles at the beginning of this, and from what I understood, it was rewritten because the director was having issues with just how it was portraying everything. Because it's really serious and then tries to kind of have these moments of, like, uplift, but I don't know if it works.
Yeah, it seems like the main point of this is that you can escape child abuse if you just imagine that you're not being abused. Like, that's the message I got.
Yeah, I couldn't... Even the general thing of the promise, where he was, like, talking about this promise, like, I can't tell if the promise was...
A good thing.
Did his character see it as good?
Yeah.
Because in my eyes, it was portrayed as, like, maybe detrimental.
Yeah. And there's, like, two outcomes at the end of the movie. The boys, their whole time, they're saving money, they're doing odd jobs to collect a bunch of money for this mysterious thing, and they're working on their red flyer... and it seems like the ending of the movie all leads up to little Bobby flying down a hill on his little red wagon and then catching air and just flying away.
Yeah. And it's the only real time... They have a few moments sprinkled in the movie of kind of these fantastic elements. Like, there's a dream where they keep seeing a buffalo.
Yeah.
They have, like, a moment in Oklahoma. Great to hear Oklahoma mentioned in the movie. Where they go stop and see this buffalo, and it, like, makes them sad.
Yeah, the buffalo was a really weird element. Honestly, it was like a metaphor, but a very heavy-handed one.
Yeah.
That I don't think worked.
No, yeah, there's a lot of, because the moments like that were so few and far between that you kind of forget that is the kind of movie it is. And
right.
So then when it pops up, it's sort of jarring.
Yeah, you're like, buffaloes can't talk.
And I can't tell the ending, is the ending optimistic or pessimistic? Because as you said, like, he flies away, but we don't obviously know if that's real because that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And they sort of make it, I feel like they try and make it where you could believe it in the world, but then they don't because the only other stuff we've seen is, like, this buffalo incident. So then the other thing is, like, is he gone forever? Like, is he dead? Did he
that's
just run away?
That's what I think happened.
And, yeah.
Because ultimately he escaped the abuse of his stepfather.
Yeah.
So I think that's how he escaped, is, like, through death, which is the saddest thing ever. So it makes sense why, like, grown-up big brother is like, no, yeah, he just flew around the country and got to do all this traveling.
Yeah, because they would leave out, like, what that would do to the mom.
Right.
Like, she arrives, she's like, where's your brother? And there's the sort of, like, the twist at the end where, like, he sends them a postcard. But again, I don't know if you're supposed to trust the narrator, if that's just him telling his kids that... Yeah. It turned out all right.
Well, and Tom Hanks says in the beginning of the movie that there's, like, something about two versions of a story.
Yeah.
The one is the truth, and then the one is the one that you're hearing.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. So I think he shows his hand right away, says, mm-hmm. I'm about to tell you something, but don't believe it.
So the movie kind of is this sort of coming of age thing.
Yeah.
And it has, in terms of, I know we're crapping on it, but the things that I'll go to the things I liked about it.
Okay.
I thought the kids were great, as I said, mm-hmm. and the moments that are just them, like, being kids, I thought were, like, really spot on. Like,
yeah.
Felt very much a movie about a kid's view from their perspective of sort of how they spent their time and this and that. And I thought those elements worked really well. The parent stuff was so on the nose and kind of not over the top, but I don't know, had no subtlety to it that it just sort of...
I agree. I love that the dog's name was, like, what was it? Stan?
Was it Shane?
Shane, yeah. The dog had, like, a human name.
I like human names on dogs. You gotta be honest.
I do too. This also had a brief moment that was very reminiscent of Turner and Hooch, in which the lovable dog character is in danger and seems to be hurt, except in Turner and Hooch, he really does die. But in this one, that was one of the most graphic scenes of the movie.
Yeah, there's just a ton of blood in the backyard.
I literally audibly was like, holy shit.
There's a moment in the movie where the stepfather gets arrested and is attacked by the dog also. And so when he finally gets out of jail and he comes back, he like attacks the dog.
Yeah. The dad likes to punish the family, mostly the boys, by going after the younger one who can't fight back.
Yeah.
And by going after things that they care about, like their stuff.
And their dog, yeah.
And their little sweet dog.
It's weird. The movie just kind of punishes the viewer with, like, they have no friends. Every chance, there's, like, a group of bullies that bully them when they move in because some other family was, like, kicked out
to make this happen. Yeah, I think their house was repossessed, and that's how this...
And so there's a gang of bullies, and at one point they're like, oh, no, we're going to be your friend now. But, like, they spent 3 or 4 scenes, like, beating these kids up or trying to. So then, naturally, they trick the kid and beat him up, and it's... There was, like, the one football scene where, like, some of the bullies seem to, like, have a change of heart.
Yeah.
But not really, because don't they... I don't know if it was before or after.
That was a trap. And that was a weird... That's what I noticed.
Yeah.
And then that was simultaneously happening at the same time that Bobby was getting the beating that was so bad that he had to go to the hospital.
And then they try and steal their wagon later.
Oh, yeah.
When they just stick. My favorite thing is that they've trained this dog just to attack these children if need be.
Yeah, thank God those kids have something that takes care of them.
So what you learn from this, if you're a kid watching it, is that you can't trust anyone.
Yeah,
except can't trust adults. Your brother, your sibling. Hide away from everything and have a dog that's like very good at mauling people who bring you harm.
Exactly.
Dark message.
Yeah. You have a brother, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's older than you?
He's younger than me.
Okay. Do you feel like this is an accurate portrayal of siblings?
I think to a degree, especially with their close age range. I'm 4 years older than my brother, and we kind of fluctuated between being close and then not being close, and now we're close again.
Yeah.
We didn't have any traumatic events to have to get through together, but I like how the bond of siblings is portrayed. Yeah. We never moved. We lived in the same house until I moved to college. My parents still live in the same house. So I didn't have any of that move to a new neighborhood, meet new people type of thing.
Yeah.
Where I feel like if you have a sibling, you would kind of grow together through that because you have to meet new people together.
Yeah.
I never had that experience. Did you?
No, not that I was old enough to really remember. One thing that I do appreciate about the way that they portrayed siblings, especially as an older sibling as well, it's so easy to get annoyed with your little kid siblings, because sometimes it feels like they're copying you, and that's something I feel like, especially with me and my sister growing up, was like so competitive and so like I'd be like, let me just be by myself, like let me be my own kid. But in the same sense that Mikey was with Bobby, if anybody tried to hurt my sister, even like to this day. Like,
you flip the switch.
Like, truly, watch out.
Yeah, it does paint that thing. I think the nicest thing with siblings is when there's something you can come together on.
Yeah.
Like, for them, their project. I think then you find, like, the box. It's less competitive and more like we both benefit from this type of thing.
Yeah. I loved that scene where they talk about the 7, like, truths or something that you experience as a child that you don't as an adult. That was a very sweet little montage, and it reminded me a lot of my childhood. I didn't get to go out and like run around without like with reckless abandon as much as these kids do in the movie, but we did a lot. My sister and I did things like make stews and potions out of flowers in the yard and move stuff around and just kind of played. I feel like that was a really sweet little moment.
It's interesting looking at reviews when this came out. Roger Ebert wrote a review that said he did not like this movie. And he said, I was so appalled watching this kid hurtling down the hill in his pathetic contraption that I didn't know which ending would be worse. If he fell to his death, that would be unthinkable. But if he soared up to the moon, it would be unforgivable. Because you can't escape from child abuse and little red wagons. And even the people who made this picture should have been ashamed to suggest otherwise. Mm. And I think I kind of agree. I think that the message that they portray is just so off kilter that I don't know what I'm supposed to take from it except to be sort of horrified by it.
I agree.
And if that's the point, if you're supposed to be like, this is horrible, then like, yeah, we, absolutely. I agree. But I don't know what I'm supposed to get beyond that.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand where the optimism comes.
Yes.
Because if it's a kid running away, then like, that's, he's so young. How is he, what is he going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way that that kid, he didn't have enough money. He didn't. Like, realistically, he couldn't have escaped in the way that they say
he
does.
Yeah, he just got his turtle.
Oh, yeah, that turtle was scary at first. Samson.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's kind of what I said about the, like, escaping from child abuse. I want to talk about these kid actors.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you loved their performance.
Yeah.
Tell me why.
I don't know. Kids in movies are either, like, incredible performances. I feel like there's a lot of great kid performances, but like if it's bad, it's very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the way that they captured, like maybe just their chemistry together, where they felt like I felt their connection and I felt like they were actively, they looked like kids on screen doing kid things. It didn't feel like an adult's recollection of like, this is what it was like to be a kid. It felt like kids, I don't know, there's like that energy and that sense of kind of wonder to just everything, like everything you can do and like the joy and every little, every time you can have a little bit of joy through whatever you're going through, like those moments really worked.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think both of those kids went on to do more stuff. Obviously like Elijah Wood, but the other actor too. And I don't know. And if you can sell a crying scene without being, I feel like sometimes adults have trouble with that without overacting, and both of those kids could make you feel awful doing it.
Yeah. I do have to disagree a little. My own personal taste. I think Elijah Wood, but he's like a kid, so also like ease off, Josie. he's doing better than you are. I think he was a little on the nose with some of his choices. But also, he's literally probably 8 years old in this movie, so everything.
I think the direction, though, some of that was.
Yeah.
There seems to be, from stuff I read this morning, there was like a lot more, there was even more like fantastical and metaphorical elements to this, mm-hmm. where like there was a different ending where they would like see, Tom would take his kids and they would see a radio flyer.
Oh.
But like audiences weren't getting it, so they just shifted it to be like more direct. Like
here's
sort of the more direct ending, which even then the ending's a little confusing either which way, so maybe it's just not something they could save.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's still very strong and a wonderful kind of, like you said, portrayal of just like youth in.
Yeah. In but with that being said, I don't think I would recommend this.
Oh God. No. To who? Who is this for?
Yeah. I didn't get any joy out of watching it. It's probably like in my, it's like bottom tier.
Okay.
For yeah. me. I just didn't get anything. Anything I think it tried to get, I think it failed that for me personally. So that in that regard, like it just lands very low.
Yeah. And I just, yeah.
And maybe there's an audience for it. Like, I feel like a movie like this sort of is the type of thing that demands a conversation like this.
Okay.
And we're, like, struggling to find stuff for because there's not a lot to talk about. It's so direct and on the nose and so ineffective because it doesn't have
a takeaway. It's like,
yeah.
What do you want from me after
if
it's, this?
If it does have a takeaway, then maybe I'm reading it wrong.
Because yeah.
To me, it's a very dark takeaway.
Yeah, right. It could have been Oscar bait, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. It definitely seems set up for that.
Yeah, except none of the adult characters really have a chance to shine.
Mm.
So it would exclusively be for Elijah Wood, I'd think.
Or maybe some best picture.
Okay.
But the screenplay's not particularly tight. The narration's decent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how bored Tom's doing it.
Well, yeah. We should talk about Tom's involvement.
Yeah.
The few moments that we get with him. I mean, that opening shot of him just sitting on the stoop. The sun shining down on him. That was nice. That's what I look for.
So this is 92. So maybe they brought him on. Like this is, I don't know if they brought him on late in the cycle or not, but this is like maybe a confusing or struggling product, and they're like, we need to have someone that can, like, sell this. But then the poster doesn't mention him, no. So it seems like he would go see this and be like, oh, wow, Tom Hanks is in this.
Yeah, it's like a little...
Or maybe he wasn't excited by the project and had his, kind of, he pulled to an uncredited role. I'd be curious to know.
We'll have to ask him about it.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll spill the beans. Yeah. Tell us about Radio Flyer.
It turns out that's his favorite movie he's ever done.
That's my favorite performance I've ever done. It does make sense, having listened to the audiobook for Uncommon Type.
Yeah.
I understand now. He's got the narration thing down. Yeah.
You can hear a lot of everything in his voice. Just the right inflection.
I almost wish there was more.
I do, too.
Because if you're going to not explain... I mean, exposition is never a great thing, but maybe that would have helped.
Yeah.
Let us into the kid's mind a little more through his narration.
I agree. I would have appreciated more Tom, obviously. I mean, big surprise on this podcast about Tom Hanks.
This is the least amount of time we've gotten in an experience.
Yeah, I'm a little let down. Yeah, what else is there to talk about? Did you do any kind of like fun adventure-y type imaginary games with your brother when you were growing up?
Yeah, we used to, my brother and I and most of my friends, we always like had characters we would be, and I was always like, I was usually a Star Wars character, and all from different, it was kind of like D&D before I knew what D&D was. We were all like characters from different universes, and we would team up and have adventures, but we would like continue them like stories, and sometimes I would record them. But we like to like be our favorite person and like go have an adventure, but like we would shift kind of whose world we were in. So like we would, this time it's going to be a Western, this time it's going to be that. And when my brother and I were on good terms, he would join in.
Cool.
We used to do really great, I forced him, but we had these PVC pipes that I had fashioned into lightsabers.
Kind of swords.
And we would do these big choreographed scenes, and I would teach him all of it. He would always lose naturally. Like the choreography ended with me winning, which I think he didn't always understand. But that was like our big thing. It was like big fight. We just basically made action movies.
Cool. I just had like a memory resurface that I don't think I've ever thought about in a very long time, at least. We had this neighbor. I lived in a cul-de-sac. I think we've talked about this before. So there was a bunch of kids my age always to play with. And the boy that lived two houses down from me, he was the one who got me into like Pokemon and like Batman, like all that stuff, and I never really understood it, but I was like, everyone else knows this, I gotta learn it. He was obsessed with Batman, the one with Poison Ivy. Is that the George Clooney Batman, like the really bad one?
I think so.
Yeah, where she kisses him.
Mm.
That, so they called me Poison Ivy, and how we played was like, I had to run around pretending to kiss them. That was how we played.
I was like, so they played you a little bit.
Yeah, I was like the evil queen.
That's the funniest takeaway, where they were like, we can get the girl to pretend to kiss
She's us. Got red hair.
Yeah.
This will be perfect.
They'd have to wear those plastic lips.
You remember that was like his big reveal, because I'd never seen that movie.
Yeah.
So then when I finally... I don't think we ever actually kissed. I don't like remember that. That'd be weird. But then he'd be like, you still can't beat me because I have fake lips on. Yeah. Like, whatever. Okay.
It's pretty intricate.
Yeah.
My dad's parents lived on a farm in middle of nowhere, Oklahoma. And they didn't have anything electronic, which as a young kid is difficult. But they had like so much land and this giant barn, and then they had cows and stuff. And so we would always go out at like night and play in the barn. And I'd always just try and scare my brother.
At night? Damn.
It was cool. At night it was creaky, and the cows were like would be inside huddled together. And
how do cows adventures. Sleep when they're laying down?
I don't know. I assume. Either.
Because I people talk about cow tipping.
Yeah.
But I think they must lay down.
No, cows lay down. I see them laying in the shade. I think horses can't lay down.
Horses.
I think that they can't lay on their side for too long, or it like messes with their organs.
Don't they have like 15 stomach? Oh, that's cows.
I have no idea.
Coming up next week on our cow podcast, we uncover the intricacies of the bovine digestive system.
Yeah. Let's do it. Probably more to talk about than Radio Flyer.
Yeah, I feel like there's not much for us to really unpack. Would you recommend... You said it, you wouldn't recommend this
movie. No, I don't think I would.
No, I don't see this really being part of my...
I hope Tom gets the check for my rental, but I don't recommend you spend your money.
Yeah, I hope he gets it too.
There's a lot of great stuff out. There's a lot of great Tom Hanks movies. You can pick pretty much any other one.
And I don't really know that this movie benefited from his
No.
His addition or his... Yeah, it's just kind of like, okay.
I mean, the only reason we saw it was because he's in it, so it benefited in that regard. But no, I don't think... Because he doesn't get a lot to... He's narrating it, but he doesn't get to like really involve his...
No, and he could be really...
His persona.
I would have loved to see him as a father, like with knowing what he went through as a child. I would have loved to see how he's raising his kids, you know, more so than that like 2 minutes on that weird runway.
Or if they played against type and he was the stepfather.
Yeah.
Because if you took kind of this, especially in 92, he's really becoming this icon. Uh-huh. And if you kind of played against expectation and made him this like really horrifying figure, it would be really interesting.
Yeah.
But would also maybe break some people, so maybe for the better.
Yeah, I don't know if the world is ready for that. Okay.
Well, the good news is we can move on and we can talk about our next segment, which we have cool stuff to share from.
Drumroll. Our favorite segment. Hanks Happenings!
I forgot the segment for a second.
I saw that brief moment of terror.
I caught it. So we are days away from Henry IV.
Oh my God. So we're recording this episode on a Sunday.
Father's Day.
We're seeing Henry IV featuring Tom Hanks as Falstaff on Tuesday.
Yes.
And then this episode of this podcast comes out on Wednesday.
Yes. You won't hear our take on anything for a little while longer, but we have some stuff to feed your appetite.
The show opened to the general public, like to actual audiences, just a few weeks ago. So it's good because it's not like opening week. It's not previews or anything. It's like really, this thing's really doing it. Tom's released a lot of special content kind of coming out to it on his Instagram. He posted a photo or on Twitter, I think, I don't remember, of him with a theater in the background, like the actual stage, which is exciting for you and I because we kind of got the most affordable tickets.
And the picture of the stage is really weird. We didn't understand how it was set up.
Yeah, but
it doesn't look like there's a bad seat in the house.
Exactly. I think we're going to be excited. I think it's going to be fine. And I've just been like learning more about this program that he's been doing with the Veterans Association, where the entire show is, and we'll talk about this in the big like recap of the show. Yeah. So I won't talk about it too much, but everybody behind the scenes is a veteran in it. This is an organization that Tom and Rita, his wife, have been participating in for years. And this was his idea to put on the show to get veterans in the business of like working in, on theater. They're hopefully finding careers outside of this. It's really neat. And there's free tickets available for veterans. And
it's very cool. There's been a string, I think, actors like Adam Driver who do veteran and military associated things with art, where they kind of bring art into these communities. It's very cool to see how people are playing out with it. And we were kind of bummed because initially Rita Wilson was going to be in the play.
Yeah.
And we're going to get the duo, but she had to back out for, I think, scheduling reasons.
Yeah, that's all right.
But
Tom has been getting absolute rave reviews.
Yeah.
I saw, and I'll link this on the webpage in the Argonaut News. Somebody sent this to us about how it's just like he's playing like you wish that he would in Radio Flyer. He's playing against type. He's playing this kind of like villainous, comedic lead. He's not playing the main. He's not playing Henry IV. He's playing Falstaff.
Have you ever seen Chimes at Midnight, the Orson Welles movie? It's kind of a telling in Henry IV world, but it's about Falstaff and Orson Welles plays him, and it's just kind of this bumbling, drunken, devious. So I'm really excited to see Tom's takeaway on that.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've been talking about it for weeks now. Every person I have to like go through this kind of system of telling people like, oh, do you have anything fun you're doing, you know, this weekend coming up? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to see Tom Hanks in this play. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. I like love him.
Let me explain. Yeah.
Here's my podcast. Here's my, I'm really looking forward to it. It's perfect time of year for an outdoor show.
Yeah.
Especially
in sunny LA.
Yeah. It's
in a weird location too. It's in like a Japanese garden.
Yeah. They're building the theater specifically for the show.
So I haven't been to any, I've been to a lot of like stand up in LA, but I've not been to a, a theater performance.
I've seen...
Mostly because I can never get tickets.
Shows, right. I've seen shows like at the Pantages, like the musicals. Yeah. But it's been a minute since I saw just straight play, especially Shakespeare.
Yeah. And this is an unabridged... It's both parts together.
Uh-huh. They normally do two shows or something. Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And it's even more exciting knowing that it's been received so well. We're about to see our hero at the like peak of his...
This is our 25th episode.
Oh, it is?
This will be, yes. So an exciting, it's like our the gift to ourselves.
Yeah, quarter.
We're, quarter life crisis in.
Well, hopefully we get to take a photo with Tom or something and tell him about our show.
Yeah.
If not, it'll happen eventually.
It'll be really awesome. I'll probably get these people out of here. We watched Radio Flyer for you.
Can you tell us what the ending of that movie is supposed to be? We don't get it. Anyway, that's it.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, this is a quick little episode.
Yeah.
A little palate cleanser. What's our next movie?
Ooh, good question.
I'm Radio prepared. Flyer Part 2.
Yeah, we actually just watched this again. Let's see here. Do Career.
Ooh.
That's not the movie. I just clicked the button Career and I decided to say it out loud. Our next movie is A League of Their Own.
I've heard so much about this
That's
one.
Exciting. That's another one where Tom is kind of a side character, but like a very memorable one.
Yeah.
Like he's, we get like some famous lines out of this.
Including one that's in our theme song.
Yeah. I've
never seen it.
Really? Okay. Let me just read you. The weeks ahead, we've made it now. We've crossed everything people haven't seen. And this is, so we have A League of Their Own. Followed by Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13, Toy Story. Then we get his directorial debut, That Thing You Do, Saving Private Ryan, You've Got Mail, and Toy Story 2 and The Green Mile round out the 90s.
Oh,
so that's
good
our,
grief.
We got some...
It's the summer of Tom.
Hot stuff ahead.
2018 summer movie.
And we're still really far away from Da Vinci Code, so... Thrilled about that.
We won't fight about that yet. Cool. I guess that's it for us, right?
I think so. You have anything cool to plug?
No. Actually, no, I don't.
Still can't talk.
Yeah.
So many secrets.
There's nothing good.
Yeah. The only cool things I had to plug is a short film I shot has just been picture locked. I'm about to see a cut of that. I didn't direct it. I just shot it. And another short film I shot, I've been told, is getting close to completion, which is exciting. And I just got booked for an hour-long pilot that an LMU alumni wrote that I'm going to shoot in July and August.
Wow.
So some cool stuff on the horizon.
Can't wait for you to surpass me professionally and just leave me in the dust with this podcast.
Hey, we're doing pretty well. I gotta admit, we came to LA with ambitions, and
I'm excited to see the projects.
Should be awesome.
Okay,
should be awesome.
Well, if you're interested in continuing the conversation, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, other things probably under the handle
Pothanks Tomcast,
and also on our website, which I forgot to say, which is talkintom.com. That's talking without the G. We got episode descriptions, the cool artwork that I make for each episode that I haven't posted for last week's episode yet. Whoops. Oh, my God.
It's a picture of you and a picture of me separately.
Oh, we got to talk about those.
Someday we'll get a real picture of the podcast team.
Yeah. But that's it for us. My name is Josie.
I'm Daniel.
Thanks for listening.